Jordana and Paul here. Well, actually, Jordana here. Paul's up at the lake doing the show from the lake. Can we actually call that working from home, Paul?
You sound a little judgmental today.
A little bitter. A little angry.
Yes, Mommy.
Yeah.
I've been bad. Hey, I'm working. I mean, with internet and the right equipment, you can do this anytime.
You certainly
anywhere.
Can. Okay, I'm not so
pretty
bitter because
cool.
You can't win $1,000, but everybody else can. This hour's keyword for cash is dime. You're not going to win just a dime. You're going to win lots of dimes, and if I could do the math, I would tell you exactly how many dimes, but it's $1,000. D-I-M-E is the keyword for cash. You text to this number, 72881. Text that word to this number for your chance to win $1,000. Again, the keyword is dime, D-I-M-E. And if you don't win right now, your next chance to win is coming up at 4:12. You up there, Paul? You awake?
I'm here.
You having a drink?
Nope, no drinks yet. No, I want to try to stay as sharp as I can stay.
No,
which is not very
yet.
Sharp.
I don't know, but maybe some chores, right? You're doing some chores up at the lake?
Well, yeah. I mowed the lawn, did some weeding, trying to beat back the jungle. You know how that goes.
Uh-huh.
And then I took a dip in the lake and had some lunch and prepared for the show. But, yeah, it's nice up here. It's kind of smoky, kind of a dirty, hazy sky, but the sun is out and... this is going to be one of the nicer weekends mm-hmm. of the entire year. Wherever you travel, it's going to be a great weekend.
Good. Great news. I'm trying to get you to talk about the lawnmower you said we were going to talk about. Come on. Pay attention.
Well, every time I use this thing, it's made by a company called Steel. And I think they have a pretty good reputation. But
did you post a picture of it on Facebook?
Yeah, I did. It's on the Paul and Jordana Facebook page. So it's a 33-second video, and it's battery-operated. You charge up the battery, and that same single battery works in all these different gizmos, whether it's the lawnmower. And I know the lawnmower looks, you said it right, it looks like toddler's first lawnmower from Fisher-Price. It's plastic. And if you have a huge lawn, no, it's not going to get the job done. If you have a small lawn, and not only do I mow the lawn, I mow the driveway. We have a dirt and gravel driveway leading back to the cabin, and grass grows. Mm-hmm. So I spend more time mowing my driveway than I do my actual little thumbnail of grass.
So do you look like one of those toddlers that's like tagging along behind his dad when the dad has the big bad mower and he's mowing the real lawn, and then the kid has his little plastic toy toddling behind like he's doing? Is that what you look like up at the lake, Paul?
That's kind of only worse. But here's the thing. I mean, when I'm done with that, I take the battery or I take another battery that's freshly charged, and these batteries last about 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
But it works in my chainsaw, it works in my weed whacker, the blower, so it's interchangeable. And the beauty of this is that you don't have to mix oil and gas, you don't have to go down to the gas station, pick up gasoline for this. And the goal, someday when I save up enough shekels for this, is to be able to power the cabin via solar and come off the grid. When I want
amazing.
To.
That would be
all
amazing.
Energy solar. I'm hoping to work with them and and get solar on my cabin. And I don't know. A lot of people are doing that increasingly, and I like that idea. And we've saved money. It's more convenient. It's easier just slipping these batteries back and forth.
There's a video
of
Paul doing this on the Paul and Jordana Facebook page. You can see his suspenders that he's working in today.
It's a t-shirt that looks like suspenders.
It's
Lori
funny.
Picked it. Wherever we go, I pick up a stupid t-shirt.
You look
just
cute.
To for me, it's like a postcard. You know, I want to remember where I went. And when we were in Germany for my birthday, she picked up this German t-shirt, and it's got suspenders on the front. And it looks kind of, I didn't know I was going to be on video today.
Well,
nobody
you know.
Cares what I look like on radio. Thank
people,
God.
People on Facebook are commenting, hey, does Paul have a financial gain in this company? I wrote back, no. It's just what he does. Paul has a financial gain in his finances, so he doesn't want to spend extra money on gas and a big giant lawnmower.
It's just easier. I can't say that we're saving huge money doing this, but for me, and you may be different, for me, it's easier just going back and forth. And we have about three batteries, and we keep them charged up, and we use them for all the tools, and it works.
Beverly on Facebook says, we use those batteries in our weed whacker, too. Two batteries consecutively. They can do all the edging, and they have a big yard. I just have to remember to charge them. No gas, no fumes.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And again, I don't maintain that this is for everybody, but if you're in the market for some new tools, you might want to just check it out. And no, I don't own any stock in Steel. I like their products. They build a good tool.
So for all of you who are saying, gosh, Jordana works so hard and Paul is flitting off to the lake to do the show from up there while he has
How
a
many
drink.
People are saying that, Jor?
Yeah, I know.
How many people?
Well, maybe just one.
Anybody?
Maybe just me. Please know he is mowing the lawn. He is doing chores. Lori has him hard at work cleaning and fixing and cabining.
Yeah, it's the dreaded honey-do list. We all have our honey-do list, right?
I
got mine, too.
It's fun to see you up at the cabin doing that list. So check us out. Check Paul out on Facebook. That's really fun. For those of you who are in the mood for a little R&R, Tim Lammers is going to be joining us in just a few minutes because it might be, I know the weather looks good for the weekend, but you might be up for a movie. So he's going to share with us what's coming out on CCO. I don't know if he's kidding. We're about to find out. Tim Lammers' movie review is brought to you, as always, by Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys seeking justice for the injured. You can find them at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Jordana, and hi, Paul. I wonder if there are any megalodons in that lake that you're at.
Oh, gosh.
Well, if there are, I won't catch them, that's for sure.
I don't know how you couldn't. It's 75 feet long, the megalodon. A prehistoric creature thought to be gone for 2 million years, actually in this movie called The Meg, exists, and Jason Statham needs to save the day. Look, this has been a great summer for popcorn movies, and this one fits right in amongst the top ones. I mean, this thing is so enormously entertaining. I really am not a big shark movie fan. I thought Jaws was, I mean, how do you top that? I mean, everything after that seemed more of the same. But when you introduce this plot where this shark that is long thought to be extinct surfaces and on the surface of the ocean, chowing down everything in its way, on its way to a beach a la Jaws, you know you're going to get something fun.
This looks like the horror movie of all horror movies. This is, I mean, Jaws was like the scariest movie I've ever seen. So.
You know what's interesting about it, Jordana, is Jaws, of course, from the 1970s, was rated PG.
Oh,
now, The Meg is rated PG-13. So, is it intense? Very much so. Is it bloody, gory? Well, somewhat, but it could have been a lot worse as an R-rated movie. So, they sort of dial that back. And that's not to say it's going to not freak you out. I mean, look, I'm not the sort of person, whether I'm on an ocean or a lake, I don't like not knowing what's beneath me.
Yeah.
You know, that thing has always sort of freaked me out. So there's that built-in tension for me and perhaps a lot of different audience members. But the great part about this is there's a lot of action, a lot of intensity. They break that up with some great comic relief. Some of it is planned. Some of it is because, look, the movie is a summer popcorn movie. It knows it. It's ridiculous, and it revels in its own ridiculousness. You know, they know that it's way too crazy and over the top, so you just have fun with it. You ride the wave, so to speak, and I think you'll enjoy this movie.
Hey, Tim and Jordana, I was skeptical about this whole megalodon thing being real, but, yeah, you're right. I mean, 60 feet long, the largest shark that ever lived, but about 2.6 million years ago, all evidence and disappeared. Fossilized teeth, they have not found anything more recent. They can carbon date these teeth. So there's a good chance, they say here in this scientific paper, that scientists are quite certain that megalodon is long gone. But that's not 100%, is it?
God. It's very interesting, you know. And again, the whole idea of a shark being 60 feet long, I would imagine this one is 75 feet long because it had another 2 million years to grow or something. Who knows?
Oh, okay.
But, you know, again, it's just a different take on the whole shark tail genre. It's just different. It's basically Jaws on steroids is what it is. And
wow.
You just got to
okay.
have fun with it. You know what you're getting into when you're seeing the movie, so just relax and have fun.
Up next on video, Life of the Party.
I don't regret staying at home and being your mom, but I regret not getting my degree.
That's why somebody's mom just enrolled in college. I'm referring to myself.
I'll see you around the quad.
Nobody says that, Mom.
Well, bring it back.
That is the very sweet Melissa McCarthy. And you're a fan, aren't you, Jordana?
I've already seen this movie in the theater because I love her so much.
Yes.
And I loved every minute of it.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. What's great about the movie is it's a PG-13 film. Mm-hmm. You know, for a while there, she had a long string of R-rated, F-bomb-laced comedies. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Look, as much as I love her, I think that is in danger of, you know, that formula of wearing too thin. So I'm glad she went back to the Mike and Molly-ish type of character, the St. Vincent sort of character. That was a smaller movie with Bill Murray where she was terrific in this more mild manner role. Look, we know she can be funny. She needs to show her comedic range, and she definitely does in this movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think I took one of my kids to see it also because it was not R-rated,
right.
But she's just so sweet, and they go back to college together, and it's just, oh, I just loved everything about it.
She's terrific. I just love her, and she does have a movie that's coming out in a couple weeks where she is going to get back to the R-rated territory, but it's going to be a much different spin in a movie called The Happy Time Murders, but we'll talk about that in a couple weeks.
All right, that's all we got this week, unless you have any questions, Paul.
Oh, I always have questions, but I want to see that Megalodon movie now.
Well,
and you know what? It makes Minnesota's lakes better, Tim.
Wait, Tim, before you go, there is something I want to ask you about.
Yes.
This week, the Oscars had some new announcements that they were changing things up. They're not going to televise all the awards, and they added a bunch of categories, right?
Well, they added one big category called the Best Popular Film category. And basically what that says to any of those nominees is that, yeah, you're great for bringing money into town and everything into Hollywood, but you're not good enough to be in our Best Picture Club. So it sort of undercuts the importance of those films. So it's very controversial, met with criticism across the board. Of course, the reason they want to bring the popular films into the telecast is because the ratings are suffering so terribly that they figure, well, if we start awarding these popular films, maybe more people will watch. So this is going to be an interesting wait and see, because how are they going to determine what's popular? Because if they're going to go by box office dollars alone, just because it makes the most money doesn't mean it's always the greatest movie in the world. So there are great movies out there that make a lot of money, like Black Panther, you know, but they should be nominated as a Best Picture nominee, not as a Best Popular Film nominee. It's almost like a consolation prize. And again, it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out.
Who's going to vote
hey,
on
Tim?
That?
Yeah.
Is it going to be the people? Is it a popularity contest?
Well,
or
see, that's the whole thing. Academy members vote on these awards. So, but in a way, if you're talking about best popular film, I mean, you're not judging it on artistic merit. You're judging it on something else like popularity or box office dollars. It's not the People's Choice Award. So, yeah, it'll be the Academy membership if, again, this category survives to the Oscars. I have a good feeling that it's not going to last. I just think there's been such of an outcry about it, against it, that it's not going to happen.
Hey, Tim, 20 seconds. Why are the ratings down? Why are people not watching the telecast
well,
as much?
Well, the long-held belief is that a lot of films are smaller films, independent films that people haven't seen and don't go to. The other thing is, you know, millennials don't own TVs anymore. So, again, they're honoring films that a lot of younger folks might not see. So, again, by bringing in these movies that they think they will see, they're thinking that, okay, now we're going to get more viewers. So, yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. And plus, you know, they can get all their information on Twitter and Facebook and online. So why watch the telecast and waste 4 hours?
And those films, honestly, Tim, like so many of them are artsy-fartsy, and I feel like I'm not smart enough to even watch some of those films that are up for best.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, the Academy has quite a quandary on their hands, and they didn't
set
do themselves any favors by creating this new category.
Yeah, all right. You're the best. Tim Lammers is his movie reviews
thanks, Tim.
Are brought to you, as always, by Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys seeking justice for the injured. Find them at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com, and thanks again, Tim.
Thank you, and Paul,
see you, Tim.
And Meg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. If I catch it, I won't be around to talk about it.
I'll never go to the ocean again. That would scare. I would not go see that. That would be torture for me to watch that movie because I'm afraid of Jaws.
But you grew up in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I would go to the Jersey Shore. I would swim in the ocean. Didn't that cross your mind when you went into the water?
Yes.
Like, what the heck is in here?
And I didn't go in a lot because I was afraid.
Were you really?
I was afraid.
Of sharks?
Yes. Of sharks. Yes.
I'm going to get you the whole series, the Shark Week episodes on Discovery.
All right.
It's
going to
be your big gift.
We'll fight about this during the break. It's 3:32. What do you want me to say, Susan? I already did already. Yep, I already did. Sorry, Susan's got telling me stuff, and I am on it, Susan. I am on it. When we get back, we're going to talk about immigration. Melania's parents were just naturalized citizen, but did they use the law that her husband wants to change? Up next on CCO. Welcome back. Jordana and Paul here. It's 3:40 on CCO. Victor and Amalia Knobs, both in their 70s, attended a private swearing-in ceremony in Manhattan, according to their lawyer. And you're thinking, Jor, who the heck are Victor and Amalia Knobs, and why do I care about this? You care.
Yeah, Jor.
Why? Why are you wasting
my
time? Well, in fact, I'm not. Victor and Amalia Knobs are Melania Trump's parents. And this week, they became naturalized citizens of the United States. Their lawyer, who was with the couple on their naturalization journey, said this golden experiment, these doors that are in America, remain hinged open to beautiful people as they have today. Now, here's the catch. The Knobs have
obtained... have to be beautiful?
No, well...
Wait.
Well, maybe to get here on a genius visa, but that's a different story. But the Knobs have obtained citizenship via the pathway that their son-in-law, who happens to be the president of these United States, has publicly denounced. You've often heard President Trump say and tweet about chain migration. In fact, on September 15th of 2017, he had capital letters, chain migration cannot be allowed to be any part of legislation on immigration. That was a tweet from the president. And yet his in-laws just became that part of that very chain. We had a lot of questions about this, so we asked a really smart person who understands it all to give us some answers. John Keller is the executive director at the Immigrant Law Center here in Minnesota, joining us now. John, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me. It's a fascinating topic, and I'm glad to weigh in.
Can you at least define chain migration for us? Who do you get to bring in, and do you have to be a full citizen? Explain the chain migration.
Yeah, so first I'd start out by saying this term of chain migration has actually, you know, now come to be viewed in a negative or pejorative term with its use in the last, I don't know, 5 or so years, somehow like setting up this expectation that people who are doing this are somehow plotting to invade the United States with all their relatives. And I just want to begin by saying what we're really talking about is legal family-based petitioning, and this has been the law in the United States since 1965, giving a preference for reunification of immediate family members. So who can be brought in through family petitioning? A U.S. citizen has a legal right to reunify his or her spouse, the children, both minor children and children age 21 or older. You can also bring married children and your parents, in this case, Melania's parents. Permanent residents, people who have green cards, can also petition to bring immediate family members, but the kinds of family members are much more reduced. It's just spouses and children, and married children are not allowed to come.
John, this is Paul. A couple of questions come to mind. Is chain migration another phrase for family-based immigration. How long has this been the law of the land? How many people are we talking? Is this a significant percentage of the immigrants that come in to the United States? Is it via family-based immigration?
Yeah, good questions. And the answer is yes. As I mentioned, when we made sort of our last reformation of family or any kind of immigration in 1965, the preference in the law that was written into the law was that people who are here should have the right to reunify or relocate their immediate family members, and those are defined, as I mentioned before. So that's been the law for decades and decades, that you have the right to bring people over. The reality of that legal process, where kind of the law versus how it works out in real life, is where a lot of people, you know, get very frustrated with the current immigration process. So some types of petitions, kind of the farther away you get from that spouse petition, can take decades for a visa to become available, just because we have an over-prescription of people trying to come in this way versus the number of visas available every year for certain categories of visas.
In the State of the Union, the president once again called for an end to family-based migration. He says it allows single immigrants to bring in virtually unlimited numbers of distant relatives. Now, I understand your definition that you gave us, but is this in any way true? Are there any loopholes that through chain migration you can bring in an unlimited amount of relatives?
Well, I mean, the president has said a lot of things about immigration that aren't true, and he keeps repeating them, and they've been fact-based, fact-checked over and over again. You know, this is just the latest example where some of his loose rhetoric in the past is catching up with him. He's also said about chain migration that family members can bring truly evil people with them through family migration. I don't know if he was referring to his parents-in-law or not, but, you know, that's exactly how they got here and got their citizenship. The reality for chain migration is that most people marry once or maybe twice at the most and have a limited number of relatives in their immediate family group. So there's a lot of inaccurate talk about this very topic, about bringing in aunts and uncles and grandparents. And again, outside of the exact family relationships that I described, you can't bring in these distant cousins or aunts or uncles.
You know, Susan brought up a good point. What about the birthers? What about the kids who were born here and then eventually turn 18 if they were lucky enough to, at least, I guess, have not been deported before they were 18? So they're U.S. citizens and they're here. And let's say their parents are here illegally. Can they, you know, apply for this chain migration for their parents?
Yeah, so under immigration law, you have to be age 21 to file a petition for your parents. So it's not 18 like it is in regular, you know, family-based law when you become an adult. Under U.S. immigration law, to petition for your parents, you have to be 21, first of all. And second, for persons whose parents entered the country without a visa or illegally, the visa petitioning process is extremely difficult and sometimes impossible. So, you know, studies have looked at Dreamers and calculated that even if they were given citizenship, the estimate is that they would probably bring in one additional relative. And again, that flies in the face of a lot of the rhetoric that's out there. But the reality, and we see it every day with our clients, of yes, you have a citizen child who's 21, but because you entered illegally, under the law that's been in place since 1996, that parent now would have to return to their home country and wait 10 years as a penalty for having been here illegally. And most
years.
People, yeah, you know, that's a risk that that most people are just reluctant to undertake. It's a pretty punitive system.
Hey, John, last question, 30 seconds if you can. The numbers, and forgive me if I missed this, but is there a rough estimate how many people come in via family immigration every year? And has this number increased or decreased over time?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't respond the first time. The way the immigration law is set up, as I said, since 65, gives a preference to family-based petitions. So the estimate is from immigration itself that about two-thirds of all legal permanent migration today comes via family-based petitions. And that's been the case, you know, over the last many decades, that preference is written right into our law, that family-based is the way to immigrate permanently for people who want to come and work, whether it be in agriculture or at the Mayo Clinic. It's a much more, there's a much smaller category of permanent visas for those different types.
So to change the law, Congress would have to ultimately change this, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And every proposal the president has championed, you know, from the Dreamer legislation package to the most recent efforts, all have favored his preference, and Stephen Miller, his advisor on these issues, preference is to eliminate the very category that his in-laws came on.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. John Keller, Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center, thank you so much for joining us today, John.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks, John. Hey, Paul, want some money?
Sure. What's the catch?
You know what? There isn't one. XL
no
Energy.
Catch.
XL Energy got $136 million last year from the Federal Tax Act. And mm-hmm. now they say they're going to give it to us. Right? You're an XL customer, correct?
Absolutely.
I'm an XL customer. Well, they say it's going to give us the money through refunds. Isn't
wow.
that awesome?
Customers, that's great.
Yeah, I know. Customers of Minnesota's other investor-owned utility will also receive refunds, smaller rate increases. Okay? So, you know, last year, the tax cut slashed the corporate tax income rate from 35% to 21%. XL's average residential electricity customer, someone who pays like $80 to $90 a month, will get a refund of about $45 as a one-time bill credit. That's a half your bill.
Hey, Jor, a lot of companies use those tax rebates to buy back shares instead of going out and hiring people or giving people raises. So kudos to XL for returning the money. That's great.
That's pretty awesome. If you're a yeah. residential gas customer who pays around $48 a month, you get a one-time bill credit of $8 back. XL says the refunds will be made by year's end. I think, you never get good news. No one ever gets free money, but right there, getting about $50. I like it.
What a concept.
What a concept.
Wow.
Ah, coming up after the break, we will have Frank Vassalero, and then we're going beyond the headlines. A Minnesota sheriff's deputy found a chicken in his trunk that was there for 5 days. Hear
That's
what happened
good.
To the chicken when we get back from the break on CCO.